I've seen war game simulations. Events just like this. They're designed to erase rational behavior with what appears to be a singular incident.
You ever seen clouds like that before?
Will, get back in the car!
Oh, that's scary! Start the show!
Welcome to Court Killers. Our mission, if we choose to accept it, is to give you the information to help you watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever damn device you want. I am Tom Merritt.
Yeah, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, and more importantly, I'm somebody who just barely got the dock open in time to know when to punch out on that opening video, which is a trailer for a Netflix original called How It Ends. Is that right?
Yeah, that's starring Theo James, Forrest Whitaker, and Cat Graham. Coming July 13th.
Yeah.
It's a post-apocalyptic cross-country.
Post-apocalyptic.
Movies, maybe. I don't know. Joining us to determine those sorts of things, the host of Coverville, co-host of The Morning Stream, Mr. Brian Ibbett.
Hello. Spoiler alert, How It Ends is with they roll credits.
That's... knew it. I knew it.
You,
I called it.
And they give you a recommendation on what to watch next.
I don't feel so good, Mr. Credit Roller.
Twist. I hate a twist ending like that. We're going to talk about all the things you need to know to be able to watch the things you love, starting with our primary target. So there seems to be a little new trend brewing. We'll decide if we think this is a trend for video, but it's video bundled with things that aren't video. Let me give you some examples. Warner Brothers announced the arrival of DC Universe. It's a combination of an unlimited digital comic platform, kind of like Marvel Unlimited, with a library of past DC-related TV shows and movies. So that means like old Superman movies, Christopher Reeve Superman movies, but also upcoming shows like Young Justice, Outsiders, Titans, and Harley Quinn. DC Universe will be available in beta in August with a full launch planned for autumn. A new report from The Information says its sources say Apple is thinking it might bundle its forthcoming original video programming with news content, magazines, and music in one big service. Apple acquired Texture in March, which lets you read multiple magazines with a single subscription, often called the Netflix of magazines. So maybe they put the video in there. I think these other two are unrelated to those first two. But those are a couple of things that are happening out there, which make us think, you know what, maybe, just maybe, the next thing they're going to try. We're not saying if it's going to succeed, Brian. The next thing they're going to try is, oh, we know you like original TV shows. We'll get you to subscribe to ours by putting it with this other thing you love.
So here's the crazy part. I think this is a brilliant idea because it's separating content not by the format that it arrives in, but instead by the ecosystem to which it belongs. And the only thing it's missing that you haven't brought up, and for all I know, maybe upon execution, it'll nail this perfectly, is what I want is a local guide. If there is one person who I enjoy hearing talk about, and I'm going to use a dumb, dated, old example, there are movies I never, ever, ever would have watched, but because Joe Bob Briggs introduced them and explained the context into which it fit into the larger genre, I found myself appreciating stuff I normally would not appreciate at a different level. So likewise, let's take this DC thing, right? Where it's just like, okay, we're going to start the Wonder Woman track. Before we begin, let's start with this new movie that's out, Wonder Women, that is about the behind the scene of the making of, or whatever. Watch that movie. Hey, you watch that movie. Some of it is fictionalized. This part was fictionalized. This part was not, but now I want you to read these first four episodes of Wonder Woman, and you'll see blank, 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 and blank. You'll see these themes come through. You'll see truth, justice, the American way, and bondage all in there. Now we're going to jump forward to the mid-1970s with the movies. Understand, these are the constrictions that they had to make a television movie based on Wonder Woman. You'll see them compromise here, but you'll see them nail it over here. Now watch it. I think that is something that I, as a fan, would deeply, deeply love. And I think this might be one of the most brilliant trends that we've seen in cord-killing history.
Brian Ibbett.
Yes.
Brilliant trend in cord-killing history or not?
It's a brilliant combination. I mean, it is a good way to give you, you know, all these different mixed media sources. Seeing DC do this makes me want Marvel to do it, of course, as well. I'm a big Marvel fanboy, but I'd like to see something like this with like Spin Magazine, Rolling Stone Magazine, get the magazine, get the music, you know, you see the music they're talking about, interviews with the artists, but have it all multimedia from different sources in one place. I think that actually is a really cool way to do it. Mix it with Quello, the concert thing.
Oh, that's great. So you get live stuff. So it's an ongoing story at this point.
Exactly.
Knots underscore in the chat calls it a pop culture Sherpa. And I love that idea. I think that's exactly what we desperately want, is a narrative thread. We don't mind viewing our content in a postmodern era, you know, from the 1,000-foot view. But I think what we want is a tied together narrative. Like, we'll talk about this later, but even Preacher, I never read Preacher the comic book, but I would deeply love to hear somebody who loved Preacher to explain to me the difference between the comic book and the television show, to take me on that journey. As we've talked about before, there are a lot of real life interactions that upon virtualization can become incredibly valuable.
I mean, it's one of the things I loved about my film class in college, and why it informed so much about my viewing habits, is I learned all these other things. So we watched Blade Runner, right? And then that's how I discovered Philip K. Dick, the writer who had written the book Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep that Blade Runner was based on. Then I went and read The Man in the High Castle, which became my favorite science fiction book. So, you know, there's something to that. There's something to that idea. Even just at the basis of trailers, we see a trailer and we're much more likely to want to watch that movie after we see the trailer because we know something about it. This is that on steroids. Like, we'll tell you all kinds of cool things that'll make you have a richer experience when you watch or read the thing. The risk they run, though, is fatigue is already setting in for subscription. Now it's not only, oh my gosh, I have to subscribe to all these video services, but I also have to bring all this other stuff that I may or may not want. I mean, do you think that these can catch on in a world where people just with the first round of offerings are starting to go, it's too much. I can't decide.
So in the beginning, I think people are going to subscribe for the ecosystem. If you're a DC fanboy, finally, you could pledge allegiance to the DC universe. You could get your DC passport that you could show at every border and say, no, I'm a member of this society. But I think the opening is for the curators who take you on a journey, and eventually you will buy single pass experiences curated by a single storyteller who tells you the meta story about the story. Somebody like, and for example, you and I have done this already, Tom. When we talked about the Dark Tower universe, you have to decide how you want to experience it. What is the quote unquote right order to do it? Because the right order is not the order in which Stephen King wrote them. The right order is based on, you know, if you want to get this kind of experience or that kind of experience. Eventually, I think you will subscribe to a particular taste maker who will write a prescription and take you on a journey holding your hand. This pop culture Sherpa idea, I love it, and I think that's eventually what we're going to subscribe to.
Yeah, Star Wars is a great example of this. You know, having somebody that directs you through which movies you want to watch in which order, which books you want to read, which TV shows you want to tag along with that as well, but curates it in a way that is has a good through line, has a good storyline. That is a brilliant way of doing this.
I think that idea works best outside of the publisher's bundle, though. Certainly outside of an Apple bundle. It can definitely work in a DC type bundle, but in an Apple bundle, it's like, well, hold on. Now there's some things that Apple doesn't have the rights to, and you know, or I'm on Android. Do I have to, you know, change my device just to have the pop culture Sherpa? So I wonder if, because I adore this idea as well, but it feels like almost a third party service that says we'll figure out where all the pieces are. Tell you how much you have to pay. You pay once, we'll get you in the door and download the proper things and add the proper services, versus, well, there's DC that has those bundles, but it doesn't have everything in their tour because they don't have the rights to this one property that belongs to Warner Brothers still and not available for DC, et cetera, et cetera.
So if this proves popular, I can envision, and I have no justification for why I believe this will actually happen, but I can imagine multiple versions where it's like kind of like a ski slope, right? Where it's just like, what's your skill level? How deep do you want to go? Here are some different options. This one requires, do yourself a favor, get a Netflix and Amazon Prime and a DC subscription, and we'll take you on the full journey. And then this other
Black Diamond is going to involve this 180-page book on film theory.
And but... maybe it does, right? Or maybe a very unpopular, counterintuitive circular time situation theory.
You are going to have to watch The Room for this one, but it's worth it. Trust me.
Right. And I think what'll happen is we're going to trust curators more and more. In the early days, 300 years ago, you went to the library and the librarian showed up and says, what do you want? You didn't have an answer. You're like, well, I kind of want to learn about this. And you trusted a human being to curate your experience to learn about whether it's, molecules or science or alchemy or whatever. And I think in some ways we're going to go back to that where it's like, I tend to like transformative stories with a circular narrative that takes us back to the beginning. I love the hero's journey. I also love sci-fi, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, okay, I have a track for you. It's going to cost you $20. That's the fee you're paying me, your curator. You're also going to need subscriptions to these three services. Check these boxes, fill in your credit card, and now let us begin the three-month journey you're going to go through. And I really think you're going to come out happy on the other end. There's a value to curation, and I think we're approaching a place as a society where we don't mind paying the price for that.
Yeah, the only part I disagree with is whether these Apple and DC type bundles end up being that. I don't think that they end up being smart enough or having enough manpower even.
I think they are
those sort of things.
I think they're a proto step in that direction in the evolution. This is the flying fish or the sea turtle that kind of barely climbs out on land for a little bit and then goes back down. I feel like that's a step in the direction that we're going to go, though.
Well, these services would enable the curation, though. They might not come from the DC universe. They might not come from the Apple app, but they'd enable these other services that could do that and say, all right, bundle, here's where you're going to be going through that path. And
I mean, I think they could do them anyway, don't you? It does make it easier to have the bundle.
DC would definitely be able to do it because they have all that content. They have the comic books that they can direct you through. But, some of these other things come from multiple different sources. If you're going to do the Star Wars example, for example, you'd have some things that come from the movies, some things that come from comic books, could be Dark Horse comic books, could be Marvel. You know, it depends on which ones are accepted in lore. Same with the books. And they don't own all that. So that would
Star Wars particularly, you might want to have, here are the 1950s World War II films that inspired the flight scenes.
Or Akira Kurosawa, some of the stuff that inspired George Lucas.
Kurosawa, et cetera. Yeah.
Well, and keep in mind also, this also could introduce once you have silos that are based on intellectual properties and not on rights management, all of a sudden you open up really interesting things. For example, we've talked about the various fan edits of The Phantom Menace or of the entire original prequels all chopped together or whatever. Like, if you had this service, if all of that, now that it's under the Disney umbrella, Disney could say, hey, since we own everything, we are now making these fan service remix experiences available for the first time ever. Here's DJ D2. DJ D2 is gonna put together his version of the way to experience all in exactly 5 hours and 43 minutes the entire Star Wars saga. I think that's great. I think that we've lived in a remix culture, and it's only by moving to silos based on intellectual property or concepts and characters or worlds that will get us to a place where we're not entangled by the current, licensing nightmare that we have.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds great. I think you run up against walls where you're like, yeah, but the perfect thing to include here is this. And Disney's like, sorry, that's NBC Universal property, though. Can't have that. Mm-hmm. But
it definitely feels like a step in the right direction, though, right?
I think your idea is way better than what's actually going on.
Correct. And I'm prone to do that. Hello, welcome to Cold Color.
No, I love it. I hope they listen to you for once.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It's probably not going anywhere.
Let's check in on our patrons, the folks who make this show happen. Yesterday was Patreon Day, where we collect the pledges from everybody who supports the show. So big thank you to everyone who continues to support Cord Killers over the years. Brian, years of support from some of these people.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to pinch an email that's supposed to show up later, but I'm going to read it right now. David says, "Hi, Brian, Bryce, Tom, Jackie, and somewhere in the background." And of course, the other Brian. So Westworld season two ended last week. I chose another show to watch to justify my HBO add-on subscription through Hulu. He chose The Leftovers. He's watched the first three episodes so far. While those dogs aren't ours anymore, I know that you've already watched and discussed the first three seasons of the show. My question is, where's the spoilering search feature project at right now? Months ago, Bryce mentioned that it was 1,500 Patreon bosses to make the search function for a spoilering time happen. Are we close? Are we anywhere near close? The number we picked was 1,850 because it seemed at the time, surely we could get 200 more subscribers or $200 more per episode, but we still have not made it.
So, no, it went the other way, actually.
Yeah. So Tom, do you think maybe we lower the bar on this? Because what? I want to see it happen too. No.
It does seem like it's something people aren't that interested in, to be honest. So if we lower the bar, I don't know.
Well, if we lower the bar, then certainly, like, if our problem is that we're slowly bleeding patrons and money per episode, then maybe we lower the bar so we could go up. Maybe being just that close to success will cause it to happen. You know what? Actually, here, I have a solution. Me, Brian Brushwood, me, the individual, pledge that if we hit either 1750 patrons or 1750 per episode, I personally will pledge the remaining $100 to get us to that magic 1850. Like, I want this to happen. I want it to happen.
It's good to litigate this on the show right now. Though
I don't see why you guys are having a problem with it. I'm just giving up my share. Look, hey man, look, you guys, let's get to 1750 and I'll make the rest happen. How about that? Get us
How
to 1750.
No?
1750, I'll take care of the rest and we'll make all that happen. And you can watch your favorite shows right along with us with the Spoiler in Time project.
Let's get on to how to watch. So whatever the new trend is going to be, it's going to be more expensive because this was we're going to raise your rate week for cord cutting services. Sony announced it's raising its PS View plan by $5 a month each due to rising business costs. So the cheapest plan on PlayStation View will cost $45. The most expensive plan will be $85. It starts July 24th for new subscribers and the first billing cycle after July 31st for existing subscribers. So if you rush in there and subscribe before July 23rd, you'll get a month at the old price, but then it'll go up next month. DirecTV Now is raising its price by $5 on each of its packages starting August 1st, with its cheapest package starting at $40 a month, top tier now $75. Sling TV raising the base price of its core package, Sling Orange, by $5 to $25 per month, also offering new free content and a la carte channelist subscriptions. Sling TV will also offer pay-per-view events and more than 5,000 movies that can be watched without a Sling TV subscription. A new user interface reflecting this content option will hit Roku devices now, and other devices will get it to come. Meanwhile, kind of slightly unrelated, Dish and Univision are in a carriage price dispute. That means Univision, Unimas, and Galavision are no longer on Dish services, and that includes Sling TV, which one of their big attractions was we have all of the Spanish language content for you. Univision launched their own cord cutting service, Univision Now, recently for $6 a month. Dish says they're trying to charge us more than they charge you. Univision says Dish has usurious price rates, but it's the same old carriage dispute that you always have when this happens. It's just affecting Sling TV now instead of just Dish, the satellite service. But back to the main trend here. It seems like everybody's raising their price by $5. We have not seen it from Hulu, but remember, we talked last week about YouTube doing this.
Let me ask Brian Ibbett. You're a cord killer, a cord cutter,
I am,
right?
A cord killer.
Now, in your heart of hearts, are you doing it because you resent the pricing of traditional cable, or are you doing it because you resent the restrictions on what watching what you want when you want on whatever device you want?
It's the latter. I want to be able to watch what I want when I want on my iPad, on my Apple TV, on whatever. And actually, one of these is the one I use, DirecTV Now. Got in on that that launch price, the $35 a month, and I haven't gotten off of it, haven't changed anything. So I'm still locked into that price. Got my free Apple TV version 2, so I'm happy with that. Doesn't look like they're going to be changing that on me because I'm locked in. But I just wanted the flexibility to be able to, when I travel, be able to watch the stuff I want to watch and not be, you know, chained to the hotel television to see what what it is I can watch.
So, Tom, do you think, when we started, there was a lot of people who were in this movement because they were price sensitive. And of course, we've talked about the ongoing problem of the fact that the highest quality experience and the most cost effective experience in many markets has been piracy. I think these prices raising is a very positive indicator that we're moving beyond that, where it's no longer the highest quality experience, and that they have the numbers to back it up to the shareholders to say, no, we should raise our prices, because what we're seeing internally is that people would rather stay in our ecosystem and pay more rather than go out and get a bunch of virus-infected stuff that may or may not be the actual content they're looking for.
I think some of what the reason they're raising the price is exactly why they're saying it, which is carriage fees are going up. And I imagine that a lot of the networks gave them a cheaper deal at the beginning, thinking, how many subscribers are these service going to even get? Like, it's just gravy money anyway. But as they build up more and more subscribers, the networks are like, okay, your sweetheart deal is over. You got to pay the real rates now because you've got real subscription numbers. Mm-hmm. I think that's happening. I also think that some of these prices were intentionally low to get people in the door, to say what we need to build up with these services, because we're a big company, Sony. We're a big company, Dish. We're a big company, Google. We can afford to lose a little money on this. Where we'll win is if we have the momentum. If we have the number, the more subscribers we have, the more other subscribers are going to hear about us and come in. The more subscribers we have, the more networks are going to be willing to participate and flesh out our offering. So let's keep the price low to get people in. And now that they've started to build up that subscribership, they're saying, okay, now we can inch the price up a little bit. And I wouldn't say it's collusion, but there's certainly an aspect of, oh, well, YouTube did it. Great. Then DirecTV can do it. Oh, DirecTV did it. Now Sony can do it. Like, they're all looking at each other saying, okay, it's safe. We all knew we needed to do this. And now's the time where, you know, somebody finally took that first step so we can all follow.
I guess
they were all so close to each other in doing it that it almost seemed like they, you know, they had advanced knowledge that the other players were going to be doing it at the same time.
I think they all had contingency plans. Yeah. Like, when situations reach X, we're going to execute plan Y. And then, you know, one domino fell and everything goes down. I do think it's a healthy indicator of the robustness of the non-traditional method of watching TV. I think the weird is the new normal.
Yeah, and this is what you expect to happen. I think we'll have an introductory price, we'll have a peak, we'll have a shakeout where a few of these will go bankrupt. Then we might have a few price drops, and then we'll reach cruising altitude and we'll figure out, well, how much are these things actually going to cost? I think we're pretty close to figuring out what that base price is going to be for these.
Yep. No, yeah. I agree.
Trying to figure out what the retail analogy is. You can't really say it's like the give out the free razor and then charge for the blades, because you're locking somebody into that ecosystem. It's like saying, here's a free HD DVD player, but now you got to buy all the discs for it.
Well, it's the magazine subscription. Get 12 weeks of The Economist for $12, and then after that, it goes up to, you know, $5 an issue.
Right. But only unlike The Economist, it's incredibly easy to cancel your subscription. Like, all of these services make it really easy to stop and start your subscriptions.
I think back to one of the things you said earlier, Brian. I think they've started to realize, even when we make it easy, not that many people still cancel, because it's just easier to keep going.
And plus, also, we've talked about this before, those who do cancel, they remember how easy and unpainful it was to cancel. And that makes it just that much easier to jump back right back on. I mean, I think I've talked about this before. I think I have subscribed to Sling 3 times and Stars 4 times.
Yeah, and how many people still have a CBS All Access account even though they're done watching Discovery just because they've forgotten to turn it off, or they're just waiting for it to come back on and then they'll fire it back
up. I watched Family Ties.
Of course you did. Why wouldn't you?
All right. Let's talk about what to watch. Promise it's not Family Ties in Under Surveillance. It's all about
location. Item number one, go watch Family Ties. It's a great show.
There's a trailer out for Family Ties. No, there's a trailer out for Wellington Paranormal, the TV spinoff of the movie What We Do in the Shadows from Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement. The movie was a mockumentary. The show appears to be more like a parody of Cops. Comes to Channel 2 in New Zealand on July 11th, and FX has ordered 10 episodes of an American remake of the movie in the form of a TV series to star British comedy stars Kevin Novak and Matt Berry. So it'll be interesting to see if the Wellington Paranormal comes to subscription services in the U.S., but at the same time, there's also going to be an FX show that's turning the movie into a TV show a la what they did with Fargo.
So hold on. So we're looking at two concurrent projects, both with the same progenitor, both based on What We Do in the Shadows, which I'm very glad I've finally seen going into this discussion. What are the odds that they are not building them in such a way that if one is very successful in one market and the other is not successful, that they can't be folded into the shared universe or exist side by side?
I mean, they should do that. My guess is they're not, because one's being done in New Zealand and the other's in the U.S.
But by they different had companies. Somebody had to sit down and say, hey, you do realize that if this is successful over there, whatever you build, build it however you want, but consider the possibility, wouldn't you like it to be sold alongside this other property if it becomes the more successful of the two?
I mean, that makes sense on paper, yeah.
And there's no mention of the, not really a sequel, but a spinoff movie that they were going to do based on the werewolves in What We Do in the Shadows. So that's a whole third thing.
That's still in development. It's just that Taika got really busy doing Thor Ragnarok and other things. So
classic Taika.
Yeah. What are you going to do when you're a vampire? The fifth Indiana Jones movie, or possibly fourth if you don't count Crystal Skull, was set for release July 10th, 2020. However, Variety reports production's been pushed to later than the original expected April 2019 start date, meaning it won't be ready for summer 2020. The rumor is John Kasdan, son of Lawrence Kasdan, is in talks to rewrite the script from David Koepp, and that's why they're pushing off the start date.
So the most surprising part of this is how little I care. I never thought that would be a thing I would say out loud. I was like, whatever.
Crystal Skull really killed it for you, huh?
It really did. It was awesome.
It's such a shaky platform to build a Jenga tower on, you know?
I mean, I'll be honest, since we're being honest, my reaction was, oh gosh, I hope Harrison's still alive. I mean, because he's going to be 80 by 2020. I'm not saying he's sick and I don't wish him ill. It's just that's past life expectancy at that point.
Well,
you know?
We've talked, in fact, we got flack on this very show because I pointed out that in Westworld, having Sir Anthony Hopkins, you know, this is a show that looks like it's going to have 7 seasons and take 10 years to do. And you have, I think Anthony Hopkins is around the same age. It's like, you don't bank millions and millions of dollars on somebody being in perfect tip top acting form as they approach 90.
Especially when they keep crashing planes into golf courses. Can't really.
Wow. Oh, man. I'm glad. Ooh, that was almost a bad place we went. Go ahead.
I mean, the other thing is he's kind of indestructible, the fact that he could do that and walk away. So maybe.
That's true. Yeah, maybe. Maybe he really is Indiana Jones.
Yeah. But keep in mind also, like, we're entering a brave new world of really strange stuff. Like the rumor, this is unsubstantiated rumor that I read somewhere, was that Tom Cruise has in his writers that all the movies he does from now on, they're gonna digitally de-age him so he won't age past the age of 50. And I don't see any reason not to, as technology gets better and better. Why not make him always perpetually never older than 50?
It will make his chat show appearances a little disconcerting.
I'm sure they'll be able to figure that out as well.
It was a fantastic film.
I mean, think about it. Like 40 years from now, it's not unreasonable to expect a perfected Tom Cruise algorithm that can show up live, have discussions live via Skype or whatever, do all the promo for all the shows, act in all the movies, and just be a perfect representation of him at the height of his middle age.
Yeah. I mean, Ant-Man and the Wasp has some pretty great recreations of some of its older characters as younger versions of themselves.
Yeah.
Wait,
have you seen that movie? It's not out yet.
I got to see a preview of it. Oh. And I know they did it in Ant-Man and they did it in
Civil War.
Yeah, in Civil War, but it just gets better every time they do it.
Yeah, the Michael Douglas stuff, the stuff they did with young Robert Downey Jr., watching his parents fight in Winter Soldier. Or no, Civil War.
Venture Brothers are getting an August premiere date and a new teaser trailer full of demons and complaining in Venture Brothers.
I'm so glad. Hello, my name is Brian. I'm somebody who fell off of Venture Brothers. It has been 3 or 4 years since I've seen Venture Brothers. Hi, Brian. when did you fall off of Venture Brothers, everyone else?
I never fell onto it. It's on my list to watch because I've had so many people recommend
it. Oh, I never thought I would get to feel superior in this skit that I just made up. This is great.
Dude, I grew up on stuff like Johnny Quest and the Herculoids and stuff like that.
How can you not be in love with this show?
I'm going to be. I just know I'm going to be, and I know that I'm going to cast away everything else in that at that point in my life, and I'm not ready to like cast away everything else at that point
in
my life.
This is the time to do it. Because unlike me, who's had to wait years for the new season because I am caught up, you get to just start in and watch it without interruption.
I get to jump in right now with all new content while you guys wait.
Brian Ibbett, I don't take this lightly. I remember in 2007 working Halloween Horror Nights, and I would run back to the trailer in between shows, and we would watch the first two seasons of The Venture Brothers, and I loved it so much. Look at me looking at you, holding up my pinky. If you want to, I will watch every episode with you. We'll record 5-minute reviews of The Venture Brothers thing by thing, and then we'll put them out. That's a real thing that's happening.
How do we do a Skype pinky swear? Do I
look this? Don't you mess around with the pinky swear. That's a real thing.
I'll totally do it.
Okay. All right. I'll join you.
You get to see it with we'll talk about it. Guy with fresh eyes, guy with aged,
old eyes, just aged and wrinkled, sun damaged, liver spot covered eyes. That's the title of the podcast.
I will join you. Stop describing me. All right. Netflix offers a brief look at Matt Groening's Disenchanted. So it's not even a teaser. It's really just a clip where the main character shows up. That's coming to Netflix August 17th. So I expect we'll get more and more of these as we get closer.
Same archetypes as all the other Matt Groening things or new flavors?
As they're showing in the teaser, Futurama showed you the future. The Simpsons showed you the present. This is the past because it's a fantasy version. But yeah, we've talked about it on the show before. It's a princess with an elf and demon sidekick who doesn't get along with her dad, who's king.
Right on.
And Showtime has commissioned a 10-episode Halo series with a storyline about a futuristic war between the human race and enemy aliens known as the Covenant. Kyle Killen, the creator and showrunner of Awake and Lone Star, will serve as executive producer and showrunner, as well as writing episodes. And Rise of the Planet of the Apes director Rupert Wyatt has been tapped to direct a handful of episodes. He'll also be an executive producer on the show.
I don't believe it. I mean, I believe those are words that they put out.
We've been telling this story for 5 years. Why would it be true this time?
Exactly. That's where I'm at. I'm like, cool story, Halo.
Ibbett, are you a Halo fan of any kind?
Played it when I had my Xbox 360. Have not played anything on that since. But will I see this? I'll probably watch it. Sure.
Yeah. But you'll go get Showtime to watch Halo.
I already have Showtime because I have to watch Shameless. Well, I have the Showtime app through DirecTV now, $5 extra or whatever it is.
All right, let's talk about what we're watching, starting with our guest first, Brian Ibbett. What's been filling up your eyeballs?
Tina and I have been catching up and binging on Homeland. We've, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of always been on our list that people have been saying, oh, you've got to watch Homeland. It's really good. But season three sucks. But get through season three because season four picks back up and blah, blah, blah. So we just finished up season three. Didn't think it was that bad, but I think it was people's expectations or people setting our expectations low that really helped with that. But I think it's a really good series. Claire Danes is great. Mandy Patinkin, always great. But, you know, here he's kind of a
that's
jerk
one
to
work that
with.
I fell out of in the middle
in
of season
three?
One. Yeah. No,
oh,
in season
really?
One, I just didn't finish the season and I never went back.
Well, you should. Season two is really good.
Right. I love Claire Danes and Mandy Patinkin both in it. They're both amazing.
Yeah. I've also been watching Clone Wars. Again, something that people have said, oh, yeah, you got to get through that. Check that out and then watch Rebels. So binging those kind of in my off time, you know, right before sleep time kind of thing. And then finally, I wrote Waterworld, but really, I mean Westworld. Finally, we decided
I
to
was
wait
wondering
through.
If I had missed out on the TV version of Waterworld.
It's on Freeform TV, the TV show Waterworld. We decided for Waterworld, instead of doing the week to week like we did with season one, like we do with Game of Thrones, other things, we would wait painstakingly through the whole season and then start watching it as soon as season two finished. So we've started watching that. Watched the first two episodes last night.
I really love this idea that maybe like the twist in the first episode of season two of Westworld is the introduction of it about to becoming Waterworld, and that's why there are all those dead bodies floating in the
right,
water.
All the floating, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be the wow. stunt show from the University theme park by the end.
Dennis Hopper sitting under the water on a jet ski at some, you know, some point with a rope tied to a cinder block is what you're saying.
Well, as you mentioned, Brian, I finally did see What We Do in the Shadows this weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to talk about that in spoiler in time, or you want to just speak in generalities?
Oh, sure,
right
yeah.
now?
No, we could spoil it a little bit in spoiler in time. But my, you know, my impressions were it was just fun. It was just a good time.
It was a blast.
You know, I put it on because I wanted to see it. I knew I find Taika hilarious. And it carried me right through. I never checked my watch once.
High praise. Put that on the poster.
When I'm watching a show at home, I very often, it's not checking the watch, it's tapping the remote to see how much time is left.
Sure.
I'll do that once in almost every movie, no matter how good it is.
Meanwhile, I am not married to anybody who works at Rotten Tomatoes, so I did not get to see Ant-Man and the Wasp. However, I am very optimistic and very excited about it. I did watch another episode of Deadwood and Preacher. Mm-hmm. Also came back. I watched the first two episodes of Preacher this season and made it back safely from Hawaii.
Ant-Man and the Wasp was great.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. You don't say that lightly.
That's that's two up from the mid-range. Yeah.
Isn't that the highest? What's above
great? No, amazing is above great and mind-blowing is the highest, which I've never given any movie.
Oh. Okay. Well, then why do you have it?
Just in case.
One day.
Yeah.
It's 11. It's, you know, just in case you need to push that extra.
I think if I'd had the scale running when Pulp Fiction came out, I probably would have, you know, 23-year-old me would have said, that was mind-blowing, right? I don't know if I'd still give it that. But
by the way, did you know that at least with the Apple TV and Netflix, the first tap tells you how much of the show is left. The second tap tells you what time you'll be finished watching if you don't pause. Like that's it changes tip. the numbers on the right to be 10:15 p.m. So you can say, all right, I'll be done with the show.
It just says the words, you can make your son's baseball game. Don't worry about it.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is I started watching Broadchurch finally, made it all the way through season one and loved it. Everybody who's recommended it, you were right. It's really good. It's only 8 episodes in the first season, so it's quick to get through. Season two, I'm not as captivated by yet. It's a little bit harder because it's a bit of a one-trick pony in season one. But I'm told if I stick with it, it'll pay off as well, so I'll probably keep watching it. Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a letter from Amar. Who at the pick that might be time limited. So listen up. This they write, Dear Killers, for the past few months, my sister has been binging The X-Files on Fox Now. They have every single episode for free in HD, except for two episodes from season 3, which you need to authenticate for. It's a pretty good deal considering that it's 11 seasons worth of content for free, and you can watch episodes in HD that aren't available on Blu-ray like season 1. My sister is obsessed with 1080p, he says. This deal seems to date back to last year. However, my sister claims that they ran a promo saying it will last through the summer, so the episodes might get pulled soon. I can't verify that, but the show is really cool. Check it out while it's free. Thank you. Sincerely, Amar. Thank you, Amar. Not only are these on Fox.com and the Fox Now apps, Hulu also has all 11 seasons of The X-Files, which is great if you don't have access to Fox Now or authentication. You have another option with Hulu. So thank you.
The streams are out there. You want to believe. Go check. If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Hey, Brian.
Yes.
I wrote another book.
What? Since when?
Ow! You know, I was just kind of bored over the weekend. Just like, let me write a novel.
Gallium? Well, what's gallium about? Is it's about somebody holding some metal that melts in your hand, not in your mouth?
Yeah, really bad SEO is what it is. Like, I've realized that since I put this out. No, gallium, if you ever read my novel Lot Beta, is set in the same universe. It's not a sequel, so you could read this one first and then read Lot Beta. They're not directly related, but they have some references to each other. It's about a salvager named Maya who discovers a huge historical find, but a mysterious society tries to keep her from revealing the truth about it, and she has to struggle with her own ethics about what to do, and at the same time she's threatened with losing her job. Is it because of the secret society? I don't know. It all takes place in Gallium, available at tommerrittbooks.com.
Right on. You know what she should do? She should get lots of patrons, and then she wouldn't have to worry about losing her job.
Well, there is a character named Britt who says we should do the group raise thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Go check it out. TomBerryBooks.com. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
The U.S. Department of Justice has given approval for Disney to acquire most of 21st Century Fox. If you recall, the deal does not include the Fox Broadcast Network, Fox News, or Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2. However, the deal does include the Fox Regional Sports Networks, and the Department of Justice says Disney would need to divest itself of those regional sports networks because it believes having them and ESPN creates an anti-competitive conflict. Disney has agreed to the conditions, and Fox has pretty much said, we still don't want them. So they would likely get sold to a third party that isn't Fox or Disney. And don't forget, Comcast still has a competing bid, but it has not received antitrust approval. So this deal isn't done yet, but Disney's now got the upper hand because they've got regulatory approval.
Is that tacit endorsement of the idea that it's like, yeah, we don't really care about any of that crap. We only want the other stuff. These are all just bargaining chips. Please just let us have Fox so that we can complete our Marvel empire.
We want your back catalog in your movie studio, please.
Exactly. And the name. Meanwhile, Verizon will shut down its free ad-supported Go 90 video streaming service on July 31st. Verizon Go topped out at 17 million unique users earlier this year. Verizon laid off most of the Go 90 staff and shifted development to former Vessel staff after VZN acquired them. No more significant layoffs are expected. Surprised? Not surprised? Don't care.
Not surprised. Not surprised at all. Hindsight's 2020. I know, but I never thought this was going to catch on. It just didn't have a reason.
I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. Never even heard of it, honestly.
Perfect. That's what we wanted.
Kids on phones want to watch vertical video. That's what we've learned from Snapchat and Instagram.
Sure.
Go 180.
Upside
down video. Stay
where you are from Verizon. MoviePass parent company Helios and Matheson Analytics has filed paperwork with the US SEC that would allow it to sell up to $1.2 billion in equity and debt securities. Now, it doesn't give them that money, but it does give them clearance to raise up to that amount through various financial means like selling shares, et cetera. So if you're wondering, how can they keep losing money on MoviePass? This is one of the ways. Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't even have a comment. Brian, well, as the outsider here on the show, how in love with MoviePass are you, and how smart do you think their business plan is?
I worry about the whole thing. I worry about you know, because they started out with stipulations, a different price. They changed what you could watch, what you couldn't watch, and there's been so much fluctuation in their offerings that I have not signed up for it yet. I even had somebody send me an offer for a free month to try it out. I'm actually a little bit more interested in the AMC movie pass. I know it's a little bit more, but it just feels like, all right, it's tied to one theater. I get 3D, I get IMAX, I get Dolby Atmos, all that stuff. And the theater we usually go to is AMC. So why wouldn't I go with something I kind of trust more?
Man, yeah, boy, did I ever mention how Brian Ibbett's my favorite guest? He says exactly what I postulated 1 week ago. That's good stuff. Meanwhile, Netflix is buying half of Regency Outdoor Advertising, giving it up to 35 billboard displays along Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. This deal is expected to close in July. Sources familiar with the matter say that Tom Mara put this in because he lives in L.A. and sees these billboards.
No, actually, I never see these billboards because I never go over there. It's too much traffic. Why would I ever do that?
Okay, sorry.
But the reason I did put this in the lineup is it's a really interesting move for Netflix to say, what we want is to have TV producers, TV actors, TV agents, movie actors, movie agents, movie producers thinking about us. And the way we do that is we buy these billboards. That's why people buy billboards on that Sunset Strip.
Yep.
And Netflix is like, how about we buy the company so it costs us $800 in vinyl instead of $25,000 in rental to put these billboards up, and they will always be showing Netflix stuff. It seems kind of genius.
That's
to me.
So interesting. Have we seen any antitrust breakups in the field of advertising where it's just like, that's not fair. You own the ability to communicate too loudly. Stop it.
I don't want to say no, but I can't think of any. CBS used to own CBS Outdoor. They ended up getting rid of it, but I don't think it was ever a regulatory issue. No.
That's crazy.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the dispatches from the front. Now, we don't claim this is a scientific result, but of the people who emailed Cord Killers, most of them agree with Brian Ibbett. And Brian Brushwood.
Well, that's what's great. Very convenient that we could say Team Brian and mean all the Bryans.
Right, exactly.
With Brian, both of them.
Yes.
Here's a sample of some of these emails. Hometown rival in Indianapolis said, I'm Team Brian. I have a movie theater 5 minutes away from home that is always the first place I go to. That's not to say I'm unwilling to go to a different theater if the movie I want to see is playing there at a better time. However, I go to the same theater 98% of the time. Another Jay Martin says, regarding loyalty to theaters, my wife and I are 100% Team Brian. We gravitate to theaters with specific characteristics, even if that meant driving further than other closer theaters. When we lived in Rochester, we drove 30 minutes to an AMC because it was one of the first theaters in the area with assigned seats. When we moved to Lawrence, Kansas, we drove 45 minutes to the AMC in Kansas City with assigned seats and a Dolby Atmos theater. Kyle says, generally speaking, I tend to use the same one or two theaters, even though everywhere I have lived for the last decade has at least a half dozen theaters within reasonable driving distance. Why? Amenities. I want the large, comfortable reclining seats and to be able to pick my seats ahead of time. Seamus says, my wife and I pretty much only go to one theater and drive about 40 minutes to get there. We have three other theaters that are a bit closer, but the one we frequent has huge reclining chairs and reserved seating. And finally, on Brian's side, Anonymous writes, I'm lucky enough to have four theaters within 15 minutes of me, but I go to one of them 90% of the time because of the consistent experience. I know exactly which seat gives me the comfortable viewing angle, the best house lights, etc., and I don't get pulled out of the movie. So that is Team Brian. We have two on the not Team Brian, and then we have one that's...
I see. They not Team Tom, Team not Brian. Are you distancing yourself from this opinion?
I'm moderator here. Yeah. I don't
pick a side, Brian. Fair enough.
Unless I'm right, I don't pick a side, Brian. David Fram said, hey guys, here in Waco, we have two 16 screen megaplexes run by Regal and AMC and one 6-screen cheap seat theater. My wife and I tend to go to the AMC and only because they put in an IMAX screen last year. However, the Regal is the only location for Fathom events and thus the only place to see the Turner Classic Movie Monthly Classics. And then Lewis says, I would never consider AMC's plan because it's limited to AMC. I wouldn't do Alamo's plan because both Alamos and Denver are pretty far away from from me, but I will go to movies at various chains, United Artists, Regal, and Landmark, and sometimes AMC and Alamo. Finally, Chris Denny says, I happen to be one of those people that doesn't go to the theater at all.
Oh!
It's not that I don't want to, but paying $20 once on iTunes for a movie I do want to see trumps a trip to the theater. While one might think I'm missing the theater experience, there isn't that much of an experience I can't replicate at home except for the big screen. But a 4K 65-inch screen in the dark is pretty darn good.
Yeah,
does he
meanwhile.
Pay people to sit around him and talk and chew loudly and... And whisper to each other to get that full
experience.
I'm
just going to bring my crying kid into the room and, exactly. and be all like Janie, Janie, stop.
Someone to walk in 5 minutes after the movie starts, stand in front of you and look for a seat. Yeah.
Did you just create a situation where you stole a kid named Janie?
Yes. I wasn't going to use one of my kids.
He's got expensive. A soundboard so that when he laughs, he presses it and it sounds like everybody else is laughing with him too.
Nice.
Josh from Columbus writes, hey, Cord Killers, I signed up for the AMC Stubbs A-List program. And just before I hit submit, I noticed something in the fine print. There is a 3-month commitment to the program before you can cancel. I still signed up because I go to the movies frequently and it's a good value for me. But if you're wanting to sign up for a month and catch up on movies, then cancel. You could find yourself with quite a surprise.
Okay. Well, good to know. Good to know whether if you're considering this thing, Brian. You said you're considering this thing. Is this?
Effect- it doesn't scare me. I mean, all that stuff. Well, I don't want to say all that stuff. I mean, the apps and stuff let you get in and out pretty quick. But this doesn't surprise me, especially for people who are like, "Great, it's Oscar season. 1 month, going to see all the Oscar films and then cancel at the end." And so they've got to do something to protect themselves.
Yeah. Well, that is it for this edition of Cord Killers. Brian Ebbett, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for letting me be here. Thank you for letting me double the amount of Brians
yeah,
on this episode.
I, you know what? I feel like we're only 1/3 Brian short of a perfect podcast here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fine. I'll name myself Brian.
Nailed it.
But let me, in all seriousness, Brian Ebbett's voice has been tickling my ears since before I ever knew him, and I wish it would stop. No, it's great. I love Coverville. It's one of the best podcasts ever. It's one of the first podcasts that I ever subscribed to. And of course, you can also enjoy him on the morning stream as well. Anything else you want to tell folks about that's going on?
Film Sack, loving doing that show. Just started up a new show on Giant Size Team Up Network about Marvel Strike Force, which is a mobile game that's actually got enough depth to actually support a podcast. So if you're checking out that, then giantsizeteamup.com is where to look for that show. And of course, Soundography. How can I forget? Just recorded a new episode today about the band Sparks. We listened to an entire artist catalog from start to finish in 7 days and then tell you which albums. It's kind of like that that through line. We're the Sherpa, the music Sherpa, to tell you which albums to hit, which ones to avoid.
Fantastic. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I'm Brian Merritt. We'll see you next time.
Hey, guys. Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors. Look at that. That's your name in pixels. When we're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
There's
name in pixels on the
internet.
There's
some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode to be one of these amazing people. Like this
be
one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.